Great to be with you this Monday morning here on RN Breakfast. Now, I did a call out a few minutes ago asking for any questions you have about housing affordability and the way America has been tackling this issue. They have many of the same challenges that we do in terms of access to housing stock, for example. You can send me a text on 0418 226 576, or you can send us a tweet at RN Breakfast. We began this conversation with a really fascinating panel of experts from here in Australia with strong views about housing affordability. And we're going to continue that conversation because so many of you engaged with it. Now, on Friday, a federal parliamentary inquiry established nearly 2 years ago to investigate housing affordability released its report, but made no recommendations. Instead, it called on state and territory governments to do more to address land supply. Well, here on RN Breakfast, we heard the arguments over negative gearing and how to best increase the supply of housing. The question is, what could the governments do? Perhaps we can learn some lessons from overseas here, where there are some pretty sophisticated schemes to make sure the private sector gets involved in providing housing for people on different income levels, especially in the US. David Rosen is a US expert in affordable housing finance, inclusionary housing, and real estate economics. He's visited Australia in the not too distant past, so he's familiar with our conversation here. David Rosen, welcome to RN Breakfast.
Thank you. Good morning.
When we talked about subsidized housing here in Australia, people assume that you're talking about social housing, housing for people who might otherwise be homeless. But many cities in the US target the number of houses they want for people of all sorts of different income levels, don't they?
Yes, they do. That's correct.
And what's the process by which they do that?
Well, it starts with a recognition that a large percentage of working families do not earn enough to meet basic living necessities, forcing them to make monthly decisions between paying the rent, the doctor bill, the child care bill, transportation costs, or putting food on the table. In fact, something like 40% of working households in the U.S. labor force find themselves in that economic circumstance. So what cities and states have done in response to this pressing need, especially in high-cost areas like you find in Sydney or Melbourne, is define income levels as a percentage of the local median income and target housing assistance through public-private partnerships, not through social housing publicly owned and publicly operated, to meet those needs, especially for low-income and moderate-income renters.
Can you explain what inclusionary zoning is?
Yes, inclusionary zoning is a zoning tool, as its name implies. And most simply put, it requires that whenever market-rate housing is permitted for new construction, a certain percentage of those units be set aside as affordable, defined as I just suggested, at specified income levels for occupancy by folks earning those income levels. And hundreds of U.S. cities and counties have been practicing inclusionary housing for nearly four decades now, producing well in excess of 100,000 units of, again, privately developed and managed housing affordable to these income groups.
One of the arguments here in Australia is that you need to resolve this housing access question in order to prevent increasing inequality in society. Has it had that effect in America? I mean, America is a deeply divided nation. It has huge inequality.
We have, I mean, as our recent election certainly highlighted, we have a vast gap between the wealthiest individuals in our society, both by income and by assets or wealth, and the very large majority of working American households. So I would say no, the provision of even millions of units of affordable rental housing, which we've achieved in the United States, and remember this is in the context of 110 million total households, has not reversed the trends of income inequality. But what I think it has done is sort of stopped the bleeding, especially in some communities. New York City is a case in point where the previous mayor, Mayor Bloomberg, announced at the start of his administration, and he held office for 12 years, a Housing New Marketplace program, which promised 160,000 units of affordable housing to be developed and financed over a decade. He ended up producing in excess of 160,000 units in his 12 years in office. And Mayor de Blasio of New York City, his successor, has announced a similar Housing New York plan, which proposes to create 200,000 units in the next decade in that city.
One of the arguments we hear sometimes against making rules about this sort of thing, including a certain number of affordable apartments, for example, in each new development, is that this will push up the broader cost of housing. That often comes from the developers themselves, but there is some legitimacy to that argument, isn't there?
Actually, no, I think that's really fictitious. The suggestion that increasing the cost of producing housing increases its price suggests that developers are voluntarily selling or renting their product below market rate now and are only increasing their price when they're faced with an increase in cost. And as we know, houses are sold and rented at the highest price that can be agreed upon between a buyer and a seller, or a landlord and a renter at a point in time. And they're really not a function of the cost of housing. If anything, inclusionary housing does have an effect on the value of land, but it has come in response, especially in these high-cost markets that we're discussing, such as Sydney and Melbourne, to massive public investments in infrastructure, which increase, in fact, the value of land. And these efforts, not only in the United States, but in countries around the world, attempt to so-called capture some of that land value for public benefit, like affordable housing or schools or public infrastructure.
David Rosen, we'll have to leave it there. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
David Rosen is a US expert in affordable housing finance, inclusionary housing, and real estate economics. It is 7 minutes to 7.